Earth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 31. The kerosene lamp had gone out some time during the chilly night. Boris didn't normally shiver while he was in bed, but then this was his first winter without Sasha to reflect his body heat. The sea air was moist, and it hung like a damp, pale blue blanket against the outside of the little cottage. He wiggled his toes inside his wool socks and argued with his bladder about getting up to make a wood fire in the stove. The urgency he felt had more to do with the thought that the toilet was 20 meters from the back door across the frosty sand than the echoes he heard rumbling in his stomach. His boots were stiff, so he shuffled the first few steps to pull the door, swollen with moisture, out of the doorframe, and unhooked the rusty screen door. It was only 2 steps down to the packed sand out the back door, with a straight path to the single-seat toilet dug into the sand behind the cottage. The grass was tall and brown, with an occasional frosty spiderweb matting some strands together like a fuzzy net to catch anything from sand fleas to moths. He had lost some weight since leaving Kazakhstan, due to the small meals he was forcing himself to eat so he could last longer out here by the sea. He had seen most of the world's great cities. He knew the delicate balance between a peaceful stroll around the block for a coffee and all-out riots that might burn that same coffee shop to its shell. The bankers ordered the police to collect the taxes through citations, arrests, and other enforcement actions, and the people would endure it until they suddenly stopped and fought back like a puppy cornered and slapped across the nose 1 too many times. Since he had escaped the ancient shipping port city of Jeddah with the help of the trucker named Saeed, when together they had watched the city of Medina sopped off the desert sand by the brilliant plasma finger of God less than 10 miles away, the hot wind nearly stripped them from their grip on the flat highway, still hot from the previous day's sun. He sat down on the cold black seat loosely bolted to the wooden box over the septic pit below. It didn't smell too badly now that it was cold. His bladder thanked him with relief as he recalled the strange feeling of peace he and Saeed had felt as they drove the rest of the night back to Jeddah. They came over the sweeping dunes before leaving Mecca, only to smell that same sweet-burning odor left by the ozone of a massive plasma flash. Mecca, too, had been evaporated from the planet. He was sure he had hid his revenge for the death of his Sasha from Saeed, and in his heart he wanted to ask for forgiveness. When the air brake was set and the motor stopped turning, Saeed had said, "A true judgment needs no executioner," and he wrapped his arms around Boris's shoulders. It was at that moment that he knew they were both free. He reached for the half-roll of soft tissue in a Ziploc bag by the seat. That was one of the good lessons a bureaucrat learns. One always has enough freeze-dried coffee and toilet paper for the end of the world. He pulled up his loose-fitting pants and cinched the belt another notch. The morning was getting light later each morning, and the sun was further to the south than he had ever seen before. Still, it wasn't as cold as he thought it should be. The wind hadn't blown in almost a month, leaving the Black Sea almost as smooth as glass, without even a noticeable tide. He kicked off his boots inside the door and grabbed a small bundle of dried cedar to put into the stove. He decided to knock the chill off the little cottage, boil some water for coffee, cook some oatmeal, and then preserve his wood for another day, when maybe it would be a little colder. "Never make a fire, Boris. You build a fire," his father used to tell him when they would hunt for wolves together. He remembered thinking his father was full of stories and fables until he was walking back from bearing his morning business 100 yards from their snow camp. It is a mark against their territory, his father would say. They can take it personally. And then he would tell another of his stories of fighting off the wolves in the woods for his life. That morning, however, as he followed his tracks back to the camp just before it became dusk, he froze with fear. There, in the center of his lone footprint, was the paw print of a large wolf. If he could have peed some more, he would have, because there was no sound, no smell, and no sign of that wolf. It was as though he had stepped in his footprint on purpose, to show him he was there, watching him, waiting for him to look down or away for a moment long enough for him to fall on the boy who paid no attention to his father in the woods. The small pieces of cedar were spread with enough air between them to channel the tiny flame from the single wooden match carefully laid to a single sheet of toilet paper, wadded up into a small ball. The cedar would burn hot and fast, catching the curled oak ribbons he had peeled from a log with his pocket knife. Within minutes, the one match spread to larger and larger fuel until the little stove was hot enough to boil water and heavy enough to stay warm until the sun dried out the shingles on the little cottage. The wolf would be kept away from the door for one more day. He warmed a pot of water from which he made his oatmeal and the instant coffee. The rest he poured into the single porcelain sink and washed his face and hair for the first time in a week. He closed his eyes as the lukewarm water rinsed the soap from his hair and from his face. He could still see the three large golden ships pass slowly overhead to the horizon where they launched their attack on Western Europe. He recalled how they had collided with some kind of shield and the first ships exploded. He had seen enough Soviet nuclear tests to know that those warheads were far more powerful than anything the Bureau of Energy had in the old arsenal. The cool cottage air felt good on his clean skin, and he felt of his full beard he had let grow for the first time in his life. He pulled on an undershirt he had washed a few days earlier in seawater and rinsed in dew water he had collected from the metal roof runoff. It was still stiff from drying in the sun, draped over the second rocking chair on the front porch. The clean cotton felt good against his skin. His green wool sweater hung generously around his much leaner shoulders. He poured the remaining hot water in his mug and stirred in another teaspoon of instant coffee. If nothing else, he would survive on the crate of instant coffee he had snagged from a FedEx claim from shipping damage. It was enough for a small grocery, and certainly enough for a year for one person. He walked out onto the front porch as the sun had now cleared the southern horizon, and would not rise much over that point for the remainder of the short day. The only noise was the spring on the screen door as it slowly pulled it closed around the rusty hinges. The sandpiper could barely be heard calling endlessly and uselessly as it scurried a few yards at a time in search for food. The water was too cold now, even for a polar bear like him to go barefoot, but he decided to walk a mile up the beach and back to give him something to do. He stepped down the five wide wooden steps to the soft sand and shuffled his boots until he could walk without having his rear foot slide backwards with each step. There were no waves anymore. The water was smooth and there was no breeze. There was always a breeze before. He looked down to the gray sand as he walked. It was the end of the world, and he was still here. Maybe he was the last man on earth. I have not always been good. Why am I still here? Are you trying to make sure that I suffer enough for what I have done in my life? Well, okay then. I am too empty to suffer. I only have one desire, and you know what that is. So if you don't hear me, it is of no worry to me, said Boris to the sand, with only his footprints from the day before, when he had taken his walk and had this conversation before. He dismissed the warmth in his stomach as a combination of very strong coffee and the somewhat stale oatmeal he had eaten a half an hour before. The water was boiled. He felt it move a little inside of him and felt perhaps he should head back to the outside toilet for another session with the soft paper storage. But it subsided as the peristaltic rhythm relaxed for a minute as he kept walking. The air was still and brisk, and he had warmed up considerably with the smooth effort from walking. He looked over his shoulder and noticed the little cottage was about a half mile behind him. The shoreline pushed out into the sea about a half mile ahead, and although he had threatened many times to climb over it to keep walking, he had always turned around at the natural barrier and walked back to the cottage. He stopped short of taking the first step up onto the rocky ridge that would have meant a climb of about 200 feet to get to the summit. There was a flat boulder sticking out from it, and he decided to have a seat and a rest for a while. He wasn't sleepy, but he closed his eyes anyway. He could hear a faint sound, but it wasn't with his ears. Or maybe it was. He couldn't tell at first. It sounded like singing, but the words wouldn't come. It was a tune of some kind. He lay down with his feet still on the sand and let his wool cap cushion his head against the rock as he lay motionless, trying to tap his gloved finger beside him as he searched for the rhythm of that sound. It was perhaps the third or maybe the fourth convulsion that caught his attention away from the sound in his mind. It felt like nausea, but then again it was still far away, and then it went away again, and he closed his eyes and took a deep breath and exhaled slowly to let the discomfort go out with it. He wanted that song again. It was almost there. Whether he was asleep or awake, he did not care. He was in the right place, and the pain was gone, and he felt at peace and could hear the quiet echo of something, like it was down the hall or across the street of an old car radio. Wise men, something, came the words. He could make that out, and then nothing else. It was too far away. And then the pain shot hard against his arm, like a boulder had fallen on it. He couldn't pick it up, and it rolled slowly up on his chest, and he held it there as long as he could, and then it passed again. It was gone now. He could move his hand again. He relaxed the crush he had put into his eyelids, but he didn't want to open them, in case whatever had hurt him was still there. Maybe it had left, and if he stayed still, maybe it wouldn't return. And then it went quiet again. The radio was gone. He had never been startled by a scent before. It was as faint as the song at first. He closed his mouth and inhaled through his nose to see if it was still there. Water began to well behind his eyelids before his conscious mind could come up with the name. Boris, came the soft voice, like velvet would make sliding off the shoulder onto the floor. Boris, it's me.